You guys, I am so incredibly excited to have our guest on the show today. We have Terry Cole. She is a licensed psychotherapist, global relationship and empowerment expert, and the author of Boundary Boss, The Essential Guide to Talk True, Be Seen, and Finally Live Free. It is an incredible show. I hope that listeners today can transform their lives the way that my life has been transformed over the last couple of weeks since I have read Terry's book. Anybody who's listening who's overworked, overgiving, overdoing, always fixing problems, always exhausted, you need to read this book. You need to follow Terry's work, and I'm so thrilled and excited and blessed to have her on the show today so that she can impact your life the way that she's impacted mine. So without further ado, Terry Cole.
What are the things that have shaped who I've become and how I relate to boundaries? If you had a maternal impactor who was totally self-sacrificing, a martyr, a pushover, a peacekeeper, then nobody needs to send you a memo when you're five to be like, that's the way to be if you want to be a good woman. We just know it. We just go, oh, that is aspirational. That is what I should be.
Welcome to Fit as a Fiddle. My name is Dr. Sneha Ghazi, and I'm a physical therapist and business owner in New York City. Each episode, we bring you phenomenal guests in the health and wellness industry who share inspiring tips and tangible advice. This podcast is for a community of people who want to keep their mind, body, and spirit healthy and thriving. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please subscribe, review, and enjoy the show.
Terry, it is so freaking awesome that I get to meet you. This is, although it was an anticlimactic intro, I am incredibly, incredibly obsessed with your work. I don't think you understand how you do, because you've had enough people that you've influenced and helped and served over this lifetime. And like, nobody, obviously you're not paying me to say this, like this book, I have told so many people, they have all started listening to the show. Literally, I texted my friend yesterday being like, this particular episode, this particular cut of this episode, this is your boyfriend problem that you were calling me about last week that you need to fix. Just listen to Terry. She's going to help you. Don't call me again.
Love it. Oh, thanks. I really do appreciate that, because this book is my baby. So yes. I love to know that it's making the impact that I prayed and waited 25 years to make.
Yes, it 100,000% is making an impact. And especially like everything that you say about high functioning codependence and this and like all of that stuff is just, it's exactly who I am and what I need in several aspects of it. And then there are other aspects that I'm like, mom, you got to read this particular chapter. This is all you right now, and you need to fix yourself. So it's incredible. I'm so happy that you are on the show today and for making the time. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. I loved that intro. It was so beautiful. And we could say thanks to Dr. Batsheva Marcus, because she is the one who, our sex expert friend who hooked us up.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So for the audience, I guess we're just like jumping right into this now. Yeah. Terry Cole's book is Boundary Boss. It is an incredible, incredible read. We're going to be talking about a lot of different pieces of this. For me, the way that it connects to my wellness, this Fit as a Fiddle is a podcast about health and wellness. And for me, this book creates so much wellness in the mental health of several people across cultures and across genders. But I think in a very, very particular sense for women, because of the cultural tendencies that are like expectations. And then if you dive a little bit deeper for on a personal note for an Indian woman, it is like huge, 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 huge. A lot of the concepts that you bring to the table. So I would love to dive right into it. And before we do that, I don't think Terry really needs a everybody should know who Terry is. Everybody needs to know. But for those of you guys who are living under a rock and don't, Terry, I would love for you to just give us like a brief introduction on how you got into this space of work.
Sure. I've been a licensed psychotherapist for about 25 years. I was a talent agent before that. negotiating contracts for celebrities and supermodels. And that wasn't a hotbed of mental health, so I decided to move into something else. But why boundaries is really the question. And part of it is that in my life, I got into therapy very young. I was only 19, stopped drinking when I was 21. So I was very much like, wow, eyes wide open without booze. And that got me on this journey of being in therapy, really got me on this self-help journey, which the net-net of that for me was that it didn't matter what quote-unquote hand I was dealt in life, good, bad, indifferent. It was that I could create what I wanted. And that if I didn't like the hand, I didn't need to just get a new hand. I could get a new deck. I could create a new game, which is what I did. I was like, I'm just going to do what I want to do in this life. And even if no one has done it before me, but that's what therapy provided for me, was this expansion. And then throughout my therapeutic journey, I realized I was a boundary disaster. And that so much of the pain and constriction that I was experiencing in my relationships and over-functioning, over-giving, overdoing, being bitter, being angry, being tired, all of those things really turning into like this little martyr in my 20s, that when it was revealed to me that these were boundary issues through my therapeutic process, I was like, oh my God. So then I started really working on that. By the end of my 20s, I wanted to get out of entertainment because I didn't care about it anymore, really. Like I was like, you need to leave before you start sucking at this job because you're so close. Because all I cared about was my clients' mental health, getting people into eating disorder clinics, drug treatment clinics, therapy, talking to them, affirming them. Like I was in the worst business in the world. I was literally the last part of my career was working with supermodels. And you know, it's an industry that is so misogynistic and friggin' hates women basically, that I was like, I have got to get the hell out of here. And that was when I decided to go back to school and become a psychotherapist. So when I started my therapy practice, I was like, oh, look, it's a total epidemic of disordered, disastrous boundaries. And I had clients who were very much like me. You know, I feel like they're, you know, you're probably very much like me. People, there's a resonance with folks who are, I don't know, we just vibe on a similar wavelength. And even as a therapist, I find that a lot of the time, probably 85% of the time, I attracted women where there was that resonance of being highly functional, super capable, and wow, just exhausted, just over-functioning your ass off and just so tired, feeling responsible for all the people and all the things. And so that was really when I started diving deep into how can I help lessen the suffering of my clients. And then it became so apparent because I kept seeing the same issues over and over, no matter who it was. It didn't matter if they were a doctor, a lawyer, a stay-at-home mom. The same things, the same pain points were coming up, and it was all about not being able to talk true, be seen, and live free, right? Which is the subtitle of the book.
Yes. Terry talks about this one part in the book and in her podcast and really all of your platforms. You talk about how a person like me, who's a high functioning individual, who's exhausted all the time, type of person who's like, I'll do it better, so I'll do it myself. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of people, we don't consider ourselves dependent on others ever. Like when I read that part, I was like, I am not a codependent. Everybody depends on me, Terry. And you mentioned that too. You're like, and by the way, you're probably thinking, and I'm like, yeah, I was thinking that. And so that part is so important for people to understand because I think it's hard to grasp that. It took me a while reading the book and going through it to accept that I'm extremely actually dependent, even though I'm the one who does the family booking of the vacations. I'm the one who sets up the Zoom calls. I'm the one who all the cousins ask for advice. I'm the one who edits SAT college essays, things like that.
Yep. So. All right. So let's get clear so that listeners, or if this is on YouTube, whoever, like people who are seeing this can get it.
Yeah.
So what you're referring to is codependency. Right. So I do talk quite a bit about it. But when I was in my practice with women like you and probably people who are listening right now, they had the exact same response that you had, where I would say, hey, what I'm noticing is a codependent. This is a codependent pattern. They'd be like, no, you misunderstand.
Everyone's dependent on me, lady. I'm the one making all the dough, making all the decisions, making all the plans, doing the thing. Everyone comes to me. And I'm like, right, but that's still codependency. So I think we have to understand. Anyway, that led, before I get into understanding, that led me to creating a new moniker, which is high functioning codependency, because I also would not have identified with being codependent myself, although I was very codependent in my 20s, because I was also this capable go-getter, making shit happen, just doing things in life. What blew my mind, and I think shifted things for me in my own therapeutic understanding, my own process, journey in life, was grasping that me over-functioning, over-giving, overdoing, pretty much over-feeling, that this was a bid for control. So my definition of high-functioning codependency, and really codependency as well, is being overly invested in the feeling states, the outcomes, the decisions, the circumstances of the people in our lives to the detriment of our internal peace, to the detriment maybe of our physical wellness because we're overworking, or our financial wellness because we're giving people money. And so, of course, we're invested in the people we love, right? Of course we are. But overly invested is, and it's got to be sort of to the detriment where, and if you're listening or watching and you're like, I don't know, I'm not sure, how can I tell? You can tell, because when your best friend, you know, has an SOS text to you at 11:15, even though you just closed your eyes, and you get back to her immediately and start talking about it, whatever that drama is that, how does that feel to you? I want you to check your level of urgency, because that will tell you. Of course, we're upset if our friend is hurt and we love them and whatever. Not the same. If you feel an urgency, like that person's problem literally just became yours, and you feel compelled, it's like a compulsion, to fix, to do something so that their pain goes away. That is codependency. And I call it high functioning codependency, because you probably will come up with an amazing plan for your bestie. But here's the thing, that's not your side of the street. And so part of loving the people in our lives is respecting them, is having compassion, but not thinking that we know better than friggin' everybody, because we don't. And when you really think about it, we are centering ourselves in the middle. When you are instantly giving advice, when you are an auto advice giver, you don't give a crap about your friend's problem. You just want your friend's problem to end. So, and you have a great idea. So you're centering. You want to be a good friend? Ask your friend. All right, but what does your gut say before I weigh in? What do you think? How do you feel? If you did know the answer, what would it be? Right? Let's brainstorm it, but let's kick it around where you are helping people come to their own answers by holding space. And it's different. If your friend says, oh, hey, I'm thinking about a new name for my business, can you brainstorm it with me? A brainstorm is different than auto advice giving, correct?
Yeah.
So I'm getting super clear in my life. And as you become more and more of a boundary boss, you will become clear to ask upfront, hey, how can I best support you right now? Brainstorming, you're looking for input. You're just venting. You want me to just hold space? Because here's the thing, even if someone is looking for input, because as you can imagine, as you just said, all your cousins come to you. Well, obviously everyone in the world comes to me too. Here's the thing. Even if someone wants my input, I'm so clear because of the amount of therapy that I've had and the amount of therapy that I've given, that nobody knows what that person should do but them. And it's absolutely fine. Like, I was always very discerning personally. As I got older, I can't say always, right? In my 20s, no, I asked everyone's opinion. But as I got healthier in my life, I really got clear that, like, there was this many people in my life, five, maybe four, whose opinion I respected, which that doesn't mean I don't love a billion more people than that. And I'm not saying that to be mean about the other people, but I'm not asking my friends from home about my marketing plan because they wouldn't friggin' know. Right. So I would be discerning. I always choose like who are going to be the mentors, who are going to be the people when I'm in this situation. You know, if it's an emotional issue, if I'm hitting a wall, I talk to my psychotherapist friends who are astute, unbelievable clinicians. And I do want their professional opinion. I don't go to them for everything in my life. But my whole point of saying any of that is we must be discerning for ourselves as well. Because if you're a people pleaser, if you've fallen into this category, if you're worried about the approval of others, and look, can we just start with talking about why no one knows what a friggin' boundary is?
Yeah.
We don't know because no one taught us. That's it. Raised as women, mm-hmm. especially many cultures like the Indian culture, like Latin culture. I mean, there's so many cultures where we are raised and praised to be self-abandoning codependents, yep. praised.
Can I tell you a story?
Please.
I'm not even joking that this happened, Terry. So I binged your book, right? In like a week from when I heard it on Marie Forleo's podcast. I bought the book. I binged it in a week. And it was like so behind on my patient's notes. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm still a little bit behind. I don't care. I went to go visit my parents the week after. And they had a celebration with a bunch of people together and not a bunch of people, it was like 10 people there max. And, there's this uncle who is extremely kind, extremely loving, you know, always the type of person who like gives hugs and like, just so jovial, great guy. My mom has broken her foot and has a concussion, has to do 7 dance recital conduction of performances this summer, is completely exhausted, can't do any of it, can barely walk. Is still cooking for these people and, you know, doing everything that she can because I learned all of my behavior from her, who learned it from her mother. I went through the whole psychology of this with her, by the way. And she's like, she was quiet for the first time. She didn't say anything back. I was like, Mama, just listen to why we are like the way we are. I'm like this because of you. Anyhow, so at the end of the thing, the uncle actually comes up to me and he goes, you and your mother are such lovely people. I just love the both of you so much. You just do so much. And even if you are broken and everything is wrong, you still go out of your way to make everybody else happy and serve us and make everything so beautiful and bright. And I go, oh my God, Terry would rip him. And that's what I told my mother. I was like, these people in our lives and in our worlds have created this, the martyr syndrome, like you talk about so much in your work. It's this, we are better people. We have self-worth. We are finally seen in society and people recognize us and value us in a room because we do that, because we take the shirt off our back and give it to other people. Because even at our absolute lowest, when we cannot function, we overfunction. And by doing that, it is this great thing. And when we die, there will be millions of people at our funeral and people will come and help our families from generation to generation. Why do we do that to ourselves? Like, Mom, you can't move. Stop. Stop right. it. Right.
And hi, cute uncle, even though you're super nice. I have an idea. You see that Mom's foot is broken and she has a concussion. Maybe get off your ass and get your own friggin' food. And I do understand. I do understand that there is a cultural element that is so powerful and it is such an ingrained neural pathway
yes.
in everyone's brain. But here's the thing. What you're doing is amazing. You are sharing this with your mother because you really love her and you don't want her to continue abandoning herself. You know why? Because she deserves to heal. And here's the thing. And you can share this with your mom too.
Oh, yeah.
If we don't stop, the universe will fucking stop us. So I was stopped by cancer in my early 30s. This was part of this whole massive pivot in my life. Because as much as I was in grad school to become a psychotherapist, I've already had a ton of therapy. I still, the amount of over functioning just in life that I was doing was you know, ridiculous.
Yes.
And as much as I said I was going to slow down, I had different friends confront me. I had different people being like, dude, you cannot keep up this pace. And I was like, watch me. Like, we'll see about that. And then when I got sick, it was like, there was no way to not stop. And I just, it was like, and I was young, it was in my early 30s. So I was like, oh my God, if this thing, and it was thyroid, two different kinds of thyroid cancer. It was like a really weird thing. I had the same surgery twice in less than 6 months. It was like a whole friggin' thing, same radiation twice. But the, you know, and I didn't know anything about, not much about cancer, you know? So that diagnosis is like someone just smacking you in the face and being like, hello, are you living your best life? Are you even enjoying it? Are you even here? And the answer was no, no, and definitely no. And that shifted things for me. That got me on the path of a different kind of healing, dedicated meditation practice, working with Deepak Chopra and David G and David Simon and lots of other people. Like, my life trajectory changed. And so I'm grateful. I wouldn't uncancer myself or because I'm here and I'm fine.
Yeah.
But you don't have to, you listening to this, all of you beautiful humans, it doesn't have to be you. You don't have to wait until you have a concussion or you have some diagnosis that's so scary or you're using, you know, numbing things in your life to get by. Because there's another thing. It's like, that's hard. It's hard to relax when you're type A like that, when you're this alpha personality, like relaxing, what? You're like, I'm going to relax by doing it. Literally, I was like, I'm doing a half triathlon. Mm-hmm. Vic's like, how is that relaxing? I'm like, I don't know. To me, it kind of is.
Yes.
But there's got to be something that's not that. And so, because I would see in my practice, women coming in, you know, and I call them shadow addictions, right? Because they may never, and you know, because you read the book, I write about them in the book where they may never get full blown, but the bottom line is they still matter because we're still using something to manage the feelings we don't want to feel. The resentment, because here's the guilt. You have a cute uncle you love. He's super great. There's nothing wrong with him. He appreciates you. He thinks he's saying something nice. And yet he's part of the patriarchal system and the problem. And you know it. And if you said to him, hey, you know, it would be great if you could get up and help mom. Like, would he be so nice and kind? Probably not. Like, reality check? Maybe. I don't know. He might. But it would go against his conditioning.
It would be so outside of something that a woman would say to him or that he would be expected to do. So it would be a very odd, I wouldn't know how he would react. I wouldn't know how I would even say it. Because yep. It would be such a weird thing to ask somebody to do,
yep.
To get up and get your own food, because yes, the expectation is to be served. And I'll tell you one more on that same story. I was also talking to my mom about, and this might be really interesting for anybody that you talk to who's from the Hindu culture. Mm-hmm. There's a story in one of the big mythological, stories with like the gods and the goddesses in our culture and our religion. And basically what happens is the god is in disguise and he's like going in the woods. I'm like misquoting pieces of this, but he's in the woods basically, and he needs a place to stay. So he sees this small farmer and he has like 4 or 5 kids and his wife in a small hut, and they are very poor in the small home. So he goes to their home and he says, I'm very hungry. Can I have some food and a place to stay? And the family is extremely poor. They have barely enough to feed dinner for themselves that night. Right. Mm-hmm. And yet the farmer gives as much food as one person should eat, which is too much that they should be giving, to the god in disguise, feeds them. And the god says, I'm still hungry. Can I have more? And gives the remaining portion of everything that family was going to have for dinner for all the children and the entire family, and gives it to this guest. Then, having been fed, the god grants the wonderful boon of forever wealth. And, you know, you've done such a great job. Basically, you know, you've given the shirt off your back to a stranger who's come to your home. You are such a wonderful being. You get all this blessings and you get all this money and all this wealth, and then goodbye. And this moral of that story was obviously treat your neighbors kindly, like treat guests well. But it took it to this weird extreme level. The story was told to me when I was a child, when I was this very small girl, I was told this story. And since then, obviously, I remember it literally was like this traumatizing story that came up as I was reading the book and you were giving all these examples. I was like, oh my goodness, I feel like that story did something to me. It did a number on the way that I behave, the way that I overgive, the way that I treat people who I don't even know too well,
yeah,
let alone the people I know very well and love very dearly, right? And so it goes back to, what are the stories that you were told when you were a kid? And this is not a Freudian philosophy. This is very, very true. This is scientifically proven that a lot of what the way that we are shaped, it's not just our biology, it's the environment, it's the people that are in our lives, it's the culture that we're born into, it's all of these stories that we are fed as children, and then we grow up, and then that's that we are the product of that and the interactions that we have in the future.
Yep.
And it's something that you highlighted that I was just, it was so brilliant. And I'd love for you to weigh in on it.
No, that's such a great example. I mean, in the book, I basically call that collection of stuff your downloaded boundary blueprint, right? So it's so important to understand why you personally, me personally, people listening personally, why do we relate the way we do? And it's not about blaming our parents or blaming our culture or blaming a story. It's about understanding ourselves. What are the things that have shaped who I've become and how I relate to boundaries? If you had a maternal impactor who was totally self-sacrificing, a martyr, a pushover, a peacekeeper, then nobody needs to send you a memo when you're five to be like, that's the way to be if you want to be a good woman. We just know it. We just go, oh, that is aspirational. That is what I should be. And this is how kids learn. Also, how much of the time in childhood did we hear, be a good girl, turn that frown around? Where's my happy girl? There was all this emphasis, at least in my cultural world, of happiness, of like, don't let there be a problem. You can tell the truth. You can share your feeling as long as it's good. Like, okay. So really, no, I actually can't tell the truth. And it's exactly what you said about how it's looked at, someone who would give anyone the shirt off their back, right? And I always, when I hear that now, I go, Betty, put your shirt on. Why are you just giving your shirt to anybody? And why is that? And also women being nice, be a nice girl, right? So these were like these highest aspirations, but they're not. They're for the pleasure and the comfort of others. And I'm plenty nice and I'm a boundary boss. Like, I don't need to please all the people out there in the world. I need to please myself first. And what happens when you're a people pleaser, it becomes very unpleasing to you, because the person getting screwed in all of that is you. And there's a way to make these shifts, because it can be threatening. It feels overwhelming. You know, you're from a culture, you know, it's scary. You read it, you go, oh my God, I see myself there. How now do I make the changes? One baby step at a time. And the awareness of, and if anyone listening is like, well, I don't know, how do I know where I need boundaries? Well, you do know. Make a list, do a resentment inventory right now. That's where you need boundaries. Who are you holding some stuff against? Who do you feel unseen by? Who do you feels entitled to your sunshine and your effort and your bandwidth and your emotional labor? Write it down, because your resentments, usually they tell us, they lead us to relationships that need for you to set some kind of a limit, or just be more honest. Just prioritize your own preferences and say it. Not thinking that it's about dominating the other person, thinking that it's about allowing the people in our lives to actually
know us, because you are also worth being authentically known. And when we don't share our preferences, our desires, our limits, and our deal breakers with people, I promise you, they do not know us. And how can anyone authentically love us if we never allow them to authentically know us? And here's another thing I want to say. You're not that fragile. I'm not that fragile, but I felt like I was when I started on this boundary journey. The idea of someone disapproving of me, being mad at me, it was so terrifying that part of my personal overfunctioning was that I was like, I'm going to be so above reproach that I will never be in the line of fire for anybody. No one can ever say anything about me. I would never do anything that anyone can say I did something wrong. Why? I don't even know. I literally don't even know, because it isn't even like my parents weren't that punitive, but it was a part of, I guess, how I got approval. When I started actually setting boundaries in it really was like early 30s, I'd say. I remember being blown away at how people were accepting of it. I was angry. I remember a specific story when I was actually still a talent agent, and I had sent this client who I always felt was entitled as hell and like kind of got on my nerves, maybe thought I was their secretary. It was an acting client. And I sent them to a photographer, and this photographer was someone I really loved. They were a friend and a photographer, and they just acted terribly. And again, I shouldn't have been triangulating, but remember, I was a boundary disaster, just getting my boundary game on. So should have been none of my business. I should have made the referral and done nothing else. But it's okay to say, hey, you know, and I did end up saying to this person, listen, I just heard from the photographer, and all I'm going to say to you is that if I refer you to anyone, I expect you to treat them with respect, the same respect that I treat you with. I expect you to treat anyone that I refer you to. How you treat other people, that's not my business. How you treat someone I referred you to, that is. So she's not going to do your pictures because you behave so badly. And I got to say, I'm really bummed out. And I thought, I'm probably going to get fired. Like, she was kind of a big client. And she was like, oh my God, I was having such a bad day. I'm so sorry. I was like, well, hey, you don't need to say you're sorry to me. You need to say you're sorry to her. So I would love it if you would take responsibility for that and do it. And she was like, okay, I will. I'm so sorry. She was crying. I was like, no one ever calls this chick out because she's loaded and famous. That's why. But anyway, that day I did, and I felt like superwoman. When that was done, I was like, all the resentment and anger releases when you tell the truth.
Yep.
You don't have to carry it around. Why are we accumulating resentment? It becomes like an elephant on your back every friggin' day when you can say, hey, I did not appreciate that. Or I just said to Vic the other day, we were talking about something and he was like, I just didn't like the tone of voice he used. Now I wasn't being like a snowflake. It was like, not nice. And we're generally incredibly nice to each other, as maybe we're annoying, but whatever. And I was like, hey, I gotta say, I do not like that tone of voice. It really kind of hurt my feelings. And he was like, I'm sorry, babe. I was just in a rush. I was like, okay, but it felt mean kind of. He was like, I'm sorry, honey. That's it. And I was like, all right, because I don't like mean, hurts my feelings. And he was like, all right, I got it. I said, I was sorry. But saying it, because if not, even that moment, I would have held on to being like, why is he taking out his bad mood on me? That's not fair. Start ruminating. It like takes up all of this bandwidth when it doesn't have to. Anyway, well, longest way around the barn. Did I make any point in that whole thing?
Yes, you made so many different points. And for everybody who's listening also, the things that you have to say to people, and Terry kind of breaks down who are these like boundary destroyers, people who like basically infiltrate your life with their personal needs, wants, and preferences, and not allowing you to do your own and express your own desires, needs, preferences. For these people in various facets of like world, so like in the money world and in the relationship love world and in the parent child world and various different worlds, she gives you scripts. And I use one of your scripts.
You did?
Last week to say no to choreographing dances for a wedding that was coming up, because that would have been the expectation of me to do that this summer.
Yep.
Because that's what Sneha does for everybody's weddings.
Yep.
And I have already zero and negative time in my life to do anything. And I was like, usually the old Sneha would have been like, I can do it, so I'll do it. It's not that I couldn't. I could push my me time away. I could push me and Ashif time away. I could push all, like, any kind of time that I have to write notes and, you know, respond to my patients well, put that away and carve out time. I can, but I shouldn't. And it's, I don't need to. And that is also not something, and I will feel so resentful at the end of it, because nobody cares.
That's what I was just going to say. The question isn't, can you do it? It's, can you do it without becoming resentful?
Exactly. And I knew that I would, because it has happened too many times. Yeah. And so I just used one of Terry's scripts. So for those of you who are like, I don't even have a clue on how to approach my husband if he has a tone of voice, or I don't have a clue of how to turn down this 7 millionth request to do somebody's, I don't know, essay editing or whatever it is.
Yeah.
This is it. You have the scripts. I mean, you change around words to make it sound like you, of course, do what you got to do. But there's a way to approach it. And you know what the best part was, Terry?
What?
I just got a, okay, no problem.
Amazing.
I was like, wait a second. Hold on. Couldn't have been that easy. And that's what you said, right? With your, this loaded person that you were working for. Like, yeah. At the end of the day, most of the time, it's us. It's really, we think people have so many expectations of us as very, and a lot of people, a lot of women listen to this show because I'm, a pelvic health, women's health expert. I have lots of people who are new moms, personal trainers who have their own businesses. Lots of people listen to this show who are in the healing space that you kind of discuss as well, where we're always giving, we're always doing, we're always, you know, we're own businesses and all of this stuff. And, you know, we think, oh my God, all of these people have these expectations, but maybe it's all our expectations of ourselves. And I this is something that I knew before reading the book, but wasn't able to articulate in the way that it's so clear to me now in so many different paths and so many different, and I even look back to so many interactions that I've had with people and I'm like, wow, you know, how come I let this person get away with this particular thing? And then you can always look back on it and be like, does that person remind me of someone else who did that? Reminds me of someone else who did that? Who reminds me of someone else? And in any other situation, if like my husband did that, I'd be like, heck no, I wouldn't have let him. But right. I let that person get away with it. And it goes back to, well, how were we raised and who are the people in our life who shaped those expectations, right?
So what you were just talking about there is about having a transference.
Mm-hmm.
And that in the book, you can ask yourself the three cues for clarity, which is, who does this person remind me of? Where have I felt like this before? And how or why is this behavioral dynamic familiar to me? And then we see who the original players are. Then we go, oh, I am afraid of my boss because he reminds me of my punitive father. Amazing. But he's not my punitive father and I'm not 11. So now it's like it, when you're having a transference that's unconscious and you're unaware of it, it really does drive your behavior. And it really, of course, is pretty much never going to be in your best interest. So those are other things that we break down in the book. And of course, stuff that I always talk about, because self-knowledge is power. The more we understand, exactly like you said, huh, why did I let that person? Oh, I see. Now that I go, who do they remind me of? Where have I felt like this? You go, oh, I get it. That's one of, yep, okay. And I can still say no. I can still back it up. I can still go back and sort of correct that, because people always feel like if they, you know, it's like they miss the boundary boat. If the situation happens and they're like, but I didn't say anything. You're like, yeah, who cares? Say something now. And you can. And people, for some reason, feel like there's this statute of limitations, right? That you're allowed to, like, if you don't say it in the minute, because we let other people, when we're being codependent and having terrible boundaries, we let other people make the rules where they're like, no, you should have said it at the time. Yeah, listen, Bob, I'm saying it now. So deal with that. I should have said it at the time. Don't you think if I could have said it at the time, Bob, I would have. It came to me after the time was over. And I'd like to bring to your attention what happened last Wednesday, last summer, or in 1978. Like, I don't care how far away it is. I will go back to the beginning of time because it's valuable. The last thing I think that we should cover about boundaries that's really important is that this is not just about, this is not a lever of control, right? This really is what you think, how you feel matters. So even if someone doesn't acquiesce to what you want or agree, or they don't want to compromise, or they don't want to eat that food that you just told them you wanted to eat, you negotiating for yourself, this will change your life. You seeing yourself as worthy of your own time, attention, energy, bandwidth. Negotiate for your needs. And then you have to be able to handle it if people don't always do what you want them to do. And then you make decisions. If it's a deal breaker, maybe that ends the relationship. If it's just a preference, it doesn't have to. But we have to be in it. And many of us were raised that like any kind of conflict, we should avoid it at all costs, no matter what the cost. And here's the thing, conflict is not a dirty word, right? Saying no is not a dirty, that's not a terrible thing. Having limits is not a terrible thing, as you just shared that beautiful story of saying no. And another thing about saying no is that you also don't need to write a dissertation on why. You can't make it. That's a good enough reason. How about I don't effing want to? That's a good enough reason for me. Just literally. Now, if a family member asked me to do something, I certainly would not say I don't want to, even if it only was because I don't want to, because we have to live with family. I would not do it though, if I really didn't want to, unless it was very important to them or someone who was saying, hey, this is a favor for me. But I think there's something when you start closing down, because it's sort of like the yes shop for you is starting to close and people are going to notice when we change the dance. And so all you have to think about, and this is how I walk you through it in the book, is next right action, next right action. You don't have to go further ahead because the whole first half of the book more is about you. I literally am teaching you how to know yourself in a real way, how to value yourself, love yourself, prioritize your feelings, and understanding that it doesn't make you selfish. It really doesn't. You know what is, there's nothing better for your family, your friends, your life than you happy. Have you ever had a martyr, friend, mother, grandmother, whomever? Do you know how not fun that is? Because, oh yeah, they do it all. But eventually, they're throwing it in your face because there's only so much self-sacrificing any human being can do. And I just feel like it's a one-way ticket to bitter land. It really is. So the assumption is, I'm doing it to be nice. The truth is, it's not nice. It's dishonest. And you will end up resenting the crap out of the people you claim to be doing it for because you love them so much. It's not a healthy way of showing love. It's really not. It's a way to avoid conflict though, for sure.
I know. I agree. Terry, you are a blessing to this world and particularly in my life at this very particular time in my life as well. I encourage listeners, if any of this resonated with you, boundary boss, just get it.
Yes. You're going to love it. Wait, I have a gift for you guys though.
Yes. Tell us.
I have a gift because I knew that your audience was going to be like my audience, where the whole codependency thing and high functioning codependency and how codependent am I and what is codependency. So I have a gift. You guys can find it at boundaryboss.me/fit. Get it? For fit as a fiddle. Yes. Oh. So boundaryboss.me/fit. And that's going to have a whole thing, a little video on codependency, a downloadable guide. So you can just get started on just understanding more deeply. There'll also be a link to get the book there, and you can get the book at boundarybossbook.com. There's also the boundary quiz, which if you haven't taken, it's so fun. It's only 13 questions and it'll give you sort of your baseline functioning around that. And that will also be, I think it's at boundarybossbook.com or boundaryquiz.com.
Perfect. I encourage everybody to explore this new world of creating boundaries. understanding it for yourself. I think you made a really good point that it's not one and done. It's not like I set my boundaries and I am done setting. It's a constant evolution with the relationships that you have in your life, the different stages that you have in your life, from being a child to a partner, to a parent, to a grandparent, to whatever you plan to be in the future. So I think this is, there's so much information that you can get across the lifespan, across cultures. There are so many things that, I mean, Terry and I are from literally opposite backgrounds, even though we're still women. We're in different generations, different cultures, different religions, most likely. And yet there are pieces of it that anybody can take away and try to improve their life. Because the whole point of this is, how can you be the best version of yourself that you can be so that you can show up for everybody else in your life as well? I believe so strongly that the world, and this is part of, you know, my shaping, is that service to others is the ultimate, right? Like being there for somebody else. And you do this every single day in your show, in your Instagram, in your book, you serve other human beings. However, you are able to create a boundary that allows you to be the best version of you and protect your energy and protect your intelligence and your emotions and everything around you that makes you who you are in such a spectacular way that other people can see that and feed off of that good energy, and you can serve them in that light and then be able to impact in a ripple effect to create the boundary revolution that you have so wonderfully started to create in the world. So I'm excited for that. And I'm excited for my future daughters and sons to both read this book and implement it in their own lives. And I just want to say thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. This was so much fun. And I appreciate what you're doing in the world as well. But thank you for sharing the Boundary Boss love, because I do believe the Boundary Revolution is here.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope everyone gained a lot of new information out of this episode. Please subscribe and review the show. It means the world. I can't wait for you to listen to the next episode.